When I came back from sabbatical last fall, I carried with me one poem. It was a kind of a guiding light and a sense of grounding. It's a poem by Pablo Neruda called Keeping Quiet. It's about the wisdom of stillness, and not just your own stillness, but practicing a collective stillness and the kind of healing that is available in collective stillness. So I want to start by reading this poem for you and just invite you to take a deep breath as we, as I offer this to you and just take it in. He begins. Now we will count to 12 and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment, without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fires, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk with their brothers in the shade doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us, as when everything seems dead, and later proves to be alive. Now, I'll count to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go. This idea of discovering and leaning into a collective stillness and a deep listening to each other and to the earth, this is what was on my mind and heart as I returned in August. And then the good work of the church and of life had other plans. There has been so much good and, I mean, just amazing ministry and work that we've done in the last few months. So much we've accomplished, all of your generosity in the campaign. I just think of all those conversations that we've had across tables, one-on-one or one meeting with two or three. All the connections there. There's been many moments of silence together and many breaths of collective stillness. But that deeper sense of stillness and listening that I'd imagined as I returned, not so much. And yet, here we are. Here we are now. The noise of cars and planes slowing down, stopping all across the whole world. The rush to the next class, the next meeting, it's all just set aside. The sitting down around tables to play board games or do puzzles is suddenly the major task of the day. I sent my friend who lives in Seattle, I sent him a text yesterday. It was his birthday. And I said, do you want to get together for a drink? I figured, he and I could hang out just as easily now as anyone else could. I said, it's like far is the new close. So we're getting together later today. Now we will count to 12 and we will all keep still. I don't mean to say, of course, that this like global pandemic is in any way actually good, which is, it's not our theology. Just more that there are gifts here too. Rebecca Solnit, the author of those words that Christine read for the chalice lighting, she writes in her book, Paradise Built in Hell, about what happens after disasters or after emergencies. She tells about these horrible, terrible stories, some of which we know very well. And also, as she tells them as beautiful stories. Because what she offers and what she discovers is that each time someone tells about these catastrophes, is there is often a moment when the person who's telling about that story, when their face is just overcome with joy and gratitude. Because in all of the stories, they have a moment, an experience, or maybe a long period of time where people around them are so overwhelmingly kind and compassionate, generous, creative, in ways that they just aren't a lot of the time. But in these moments of emergency, all of this comes to the surface. Who we can be comes to the surface. Who we are is on display in these moments, these most uncertain moments of crisis, in danger, or at least who we are and who we can be comes to the surface in these moments when we actively engage and work with the anxiety and fear that arise in these same moments. I mean, anxiety and fear, they call into action our amygdala, that lizard brain, which makes empathy and compassion, all these selves that we actually are, that we want to be, really hard to access. Fear and anxiety are a natural reaction to what we are experiencing right now. And I think it would be quite strange to not be afraid. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot that's unknown. There's a lot of a sense of emergency and a lot emerging. So we need to tend to that fear and anxiety, not just try to act like it's not there, like we can just push it away, which means we also need to keep turning to the gifts of this time, the beauty and the breath, the new ways of being still together, still together, so that we don't let fear have the last word. We need to ground ourselves in this moment, here and now, in what really matters. As Neruda says, life is what it is about. So that in this emergency, we all can emerge anew into the life that we are meant for. A life of connection and community. A life held close, even when we are, for now, far apart.